Jason coming in. Oh, wait.
See, the thing.
Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. This is broadcast 561. It's September the 6th, 1982. This is station KAZU in Pacific Grove, California. If we have a little problem with the production board here, it's because a holiday is taking place and there's some problems working the controls, but forgive us and everything will be okay. I want to continue for the first part of this broadcast for a few minutes on the subject, my favorite subject, Kramer versus Kramer. Many of you know that I'm pursuing this Mr. Fritz Kramer, who's worked in the Pentagon and retired recently for 30 years, and Adolf Hitler's Fritz Kramer, who was Hitler's chief of staff, who was taken prisoner at the Malmedy trials. He was prisoner number 33 at the Dachau trials. We have our Pentagon Fritz Kramer and our Hitler, Fritz Kramer, and I'm trying to see if they're one and the same, and if the Pentagon has been run by the same person since World War II, the decision made as early as 1943 to hand our government over to Hitler's chief of staff. That project is a continuous project, and I work on it as much as I can and collect books on the subject. And along those lines, I mentioned several weeks ago on this program, and this pertains to that subject, a book called The Circle by Steve Sagan that just came out. I don't even have the book yet. I have book reviews of it, and it seemed that this gentleman who wrote the book, The Formula, is very much aware of the way the world is run and the way it is manipulated through military people, through narcotics traffic, through assassinations. And I refer to that book, and as soon as I can, I'll obtain the book. Now, the author was on KGO answering questions on a talk show just several weeks ago, and a listener to World Watchers taped it for me and sent it to me, and I transcribed the tape. And it was very important. It was about the Korean CIA, and I'm using direct quotations of the author, Steve Sagan, with Owen Spann. He said the KCIA was formed by our CIA, and he referred to Mr. Tongson Park, a graduate of Oxford and Cambridge, who went to Washington, D.C., and under the guise of rice growing, set up the intelligence apparatus in Korea. And he talked about Reverend Moon and his influence on the youth, the minds of our country, and how all of his power was swept under the rug at the time of the investigation of Koreagate, again by Leon Jaworski, who worked at Nuremberg as an attorney and for the Warren Commission and the Senate Select Committee in the Koreagate. Mr. Jaworski has a really feeble broom that seems to sweep things under the rug that shouldn't be there and then quits the job, but he's been with the CIA continuously, so that's another story. But Mr. Sagan said something which on the air, which is the essence of why I do my research and what the research is about. And in addition to the book review, I just want to share those sentences in a minute and then get into the Kramer versus Kramer part of this. He said there is a small group running this country, and a picture emerges, a frightening picture, of unelected group of people in Washington behind alphabet soup of letters under the guise of national security that collect, interpret, and feed information to the elected officials to act upon. We don't vote for the men or women. We don't know what their prejudices are. We don't know what their credentials are. They're civil servants. We've put out, graduated about 300,000 of these operatives. They leave public service and go into private industry, and every major corporation is employing them. They're wiretap experts. They're assassins. And he said that it's a grave threat for all of us to have these people operating and influencing those people that we have elected. And then he said we have spies. In addition to the spies among us, we have the killing team dealing with the underworld. And he went in at length about the assassinations. He talked on the air. He said William Colby, who was CIA director, said at his congressional hearings that political assassinations must be kept from the president. They're secret. And then he went into Tongson Park and the money for the operations of Korea Gate that influence our members of Congress. And it's very valuable because when Ronald Reagan wants to get the votes across, he calls in House Speaker Tip O'Neill, he twists his arm, he reminds him of Korea Gate and all those little sexual parties they had in and out of the congressional offices, and then Tip votes, of course, the way Ronald Reagan wants. Mr. Sagan said, they're also moving drugs. I went to Palermo, Italy, in doing research for this book. I visited the heroin laboratories. A chemist runs them. They make morphine bricks. They're distributed through Amsterdam from Palermo, Italy, into New York with diplomatic pouches, airline stewardesses, to our own society that affects our children. And this circle that he talked about in this one book is Korea and organized crime. And then one woman called up on the program. It is a talk show. And she reminded him that Philip Habib was, 10 years ago, was the bag man for Korea Gate. He's now on the director appointment directorship of three mysterious corporations. One is Bechtel, which is privately owned and totally unexposed to the public view. And in his experience, he was the ambassador to South Korea. And earlier than that, he represented the State Department at Seoul, Korea, when all of the bag money, the narcotics traffic was beginning to pour in. The South Koreans got $20 billion to send three crack troops down to Southeast Asia to Vietnam. And Korea was into the drug traffic and the operations of the heroin and cocaine. And he said also, Mr. Habib, in addition to the Bechtel Group, works with an Oriental Connection and the Central American Intelligence. Now, Mr. Habib is over the moderator of the Israeli-Lebanon conflict. And I mentioned several weeks ago that the true story of the battle over there is Mr. Sharon separating and dealing drugs with Mr. Gamal, and how they would use the towns and ports of Lebanon, and the large heroin, cocaine, opium traffic would go out of Lebanon, and Israel and Lebanon would profit from this. And when Mr. Habib was made the moderator of this conflict, and they found out he was on the payroll of Bechtel, they asked Mr. Begin and Mr. Sharon, what do you think of this? They said, that's fine. We love him. Well, Bechtel is very anti-Israeli. They represent the Saudi Arabian government that has blacklisted people dealing with Israel. So that in that conflict, we call it a conflict over there, they know what they are doing. And Mr. Habib was involved 10 years ago in the Korea Gate when the drug traffic, the CIA, and the foundation of Reverend Moon as a spy agency under the guise of religion was set up by Admiral Burke and our Central Intelligence Agency for the anti-communist push in Southeast Asia beginning in 1961-62. They were working on this operation. Well, with that in mind, I got out my hearings of the Korea Gate. I have 10 volumes of the hearings that went on in 1977. And the first person I turned to involved with Reverend Moon and Tong Son Park and the Korean CIA was, I turned to a FBI report and a correspondence to Mr. Salinan from Dan Pfefferman. And those are two of the high executives of the Moon operation, the Reverend Moon, and using the Christian, World Christian Movement. And one of the items there was one appointment, September the 11th, 1974. Lunch with Sven Kramer on Thursday to discuss Vietnam. He has not seen us since our return. He invited Louise and me to be his guests. Now, Sven Kramer is the son of Fritz Kramer. He was born and taken right to Nazi Germany during the war. And when Kramer was through with his army stint, he came home to pick up Sven, and his mother and father were IG Farben people and well off in Germany, and brought Sven to the United States, where he was a protege of Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger, and his son went into the Pentagon and the National Security Council. So Sven Kramer appears in this scene as a moderator through the Korea Gate, along with the others of Reverend Moon and the super spy agency that wants to turn the world Christian. Also in this memo, there was an internal security memo about Reverend Moon, and they said, we will use the church and missionaries in countries like Greece and Portugal to coach anti-communist forces as a catalyst for effective action. Then another memo, internal security. How about the news leaks? They're getting ridiculous. The Pentagon Papers, etc. The White House is investigating reporters, also muckrakers, that crucified an American president. They're referring to Richard Nixon. Now, Lawrence Stern, he was a radio moderator at the time that we don't hear of anymore, of all people, comes up with a story quoting minutes of a top-secret State Department meeting at which Secretary Kissinger allegedly ordered the CIA to overthrow Allende. I really want to do something about this. We'll start with the TIDE, T-I-D-E, large letters, whatever the code word is, but I seriously would like to suggest putting muscle behind it sometime in the future and let things settle down. There should be laws against this kind of thing. Now, later it turned out that Henry Kissinger had ordered the removal of Allende. Allende was murdered. He said this is not acceptable. The people of Chile can't decide for their interests. I'm paraphrasing what he said, what kind of government they want. So he did, in fact, order the murder of Allende. But Sven Kramer is working with the Moonies to find and the Korean CIA to find a way to get even with a man who told us that Kissinger was this killer and planned these murders of heads of states. And the point is that they didn't say we'll have to find a way to get a law against this kind of thing, meaning killing heads of states and overthrowing their governments. He said we will later do something to this person for exposing the leak. So Sven Kramer, the protege of Henry Kissinger in Hague, the son of Mr. Fritz Kramer in the Pentagon, continues his daddy's work. He's still in official positions there, and I think that is very interesting. I took out Who's Who, the 1975 edition, and looked up the biography of Mr. Habib, and when men are traveling back and forth as much as he is playing both sides in the middle, it's interesting to look up his role, and also because of the narcotics traffic. And Mr. Sagan said it's still going on. The BRICS, the opium, the heroin and cocaine, the Korean, the Golden Triangle down there of Southeast Asia into Palermo, and no longer Marseille, but Amsterdam to the United States. And sure enough, in 1962 to 1965, the very year that the Moonies were formed with the memos of these hearings saying we'll have a CIA operation, we'll train the youth as spies for all over the world. He was, in fact, in Seoul, Korea. That was the era when John Kennedy was murdered, and he was stationed as an ambassador or representative of the State Department in Korea. Then Mr. Habib, in 1971, was the ambassador to Korea and Seoul. And then when Richard Nixon became in trouble after Watergate and was exposed starting in June 72, by 1973-74, Reverend Moon brought over his multi-million dollar channeling propaganda for the great hero Richard Nixon and tried to affect the American opinion of whether he should be impeached or not with all kinds of vigils. And Mr. Habib had positions over in Korea. This was brought up just on the talk show. I hadn't looked it up before. Now, one other matter on Kramer versus Kramer that might interest you to continue it. I got a letter from Fletcher Prouty. He wrote The Secret Team. He was the liaison of the Pentagon to the CIA and had very important positions there. And he said, in the Pentagon phone books, all the higher level types are listed twice. At least once in their alphabetical listing, like K under Kramer, once in the functional listing. Kramer is always in the former, the alphabetical, but not often in the latter, he says. And he sent a letter to Charles Spears that Charles sent to me. Here is something that may be helpful. I have taken out a set of Pentagon telephone directories from past years. They list things just as they are, but some weird things happen even then. For example, one time Haig was in two different offices at the Pentagon at the same time. That does not happen. There are a lot of people who get a Pentagon phone listing with an office listing who never spent a day in the Pentagon in their lives. And he looked up his telephone book in the Pentagon. In the summer of 63, that's just prior to the Kennedy assassination, the director of coordination analysis was General L.E. Shea, S-H-E-A. Dr. Fritz Kramer was listed in room 3D631, the same as Mr. Shea. This is a room of the directorate, but under the directorate heading, there is no Fritz Kramer there. He's listed in the room, but there's nobody in that room. It's a Colonel Reed. In the fall of 63, under the Directorate of Coordination and Analysis, Policy and Strategy Division, Colonel W.R. Reed is in room 3D631 listed, and Kramer is listed, but he's not listed under the Directorate. He's in the alphabetical listing only. In the Pentagon system, this is most unusual. I'm reading this to you because Fletcher is such an expert on both the CIA and Pentagon, and if you want to know his credentials, read his well-known book, The Secret Team. In the summer of 65, again, Kramer is listed in a room 3C626 under the alphabetical, but in that room is Colonel Knowlton. And he's listed in there, but he's not there. The importance of this, because Fletcher writes that all the time he was there, he never saw Kramer, is that Kramer could be traveling internationally all over the world and be listed in the Pentagon in particular room numbers. I'm convinced he's part of Otto Skorzeny's Odessa network. And even in 1944-45, when the war was winding down, I read to you from the Pentagon that he was in seven different countries. In 1967, the Directorate of Studies was Colonel B.C. Burnell, room 3C632. Kramer is listed as a special assistant with a Dr. J.G. Honig, doesn't evidently exist. In the spring of 68, in the Director of Studies, General W.O. Query is in a room, and Kramer is listed there, but in that room is a Lieutenant Colonel J.D. Nacy. In the winter of 68, the Director of Studies, Mr. General Query, is assigned to this area. Kramer is listed as a special assistant, also Colonel Nacy, but the room that he's assigned to is far away in the Pentagon from his boss. By 1971, he's a special advisor to General W.K. Bennett, but he isn't near him, and Fletcher said that's almost impossible. The special advisor is close by. It is strange to find his office so far from the general's office. This is a clue to some unusual assignment. Usually the general would have his very senior special advisor right next to him. I do not ever recall meeting Kramer, even though I was in the Pentagon during many of the years he was there. The contacts I had with the Army while I was chief of the Special Operations Division of the Office of Joint Chiefs of Staff were mostly with the general counsel in the Army, who was General Counsel Joe Califano. And this is where Alexander Haig comes in. Now, Haig is so much part of the Fritz Kramer connections to Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig. I'll update you on this. This is the Haig story as I have known it, and I know it quite well because I worked in that office. I headed the senior office, the Joint Chief of Staff office, and Califano and Haig were one step down in the Army. I also had Navy and Air Force contacts. One day, Califano introduced me to a new young major who just was assigned to his office. It was Major Haig. There was a big office. He was the end of a hall. There was a door into another office, and he could not be seen. Haig sat there. As I understand it from some of my Army colleagues in the Joint Chief of Staff, Haig at West Point had been in charge of a group of cadets. He did such a poor job with them that he got in trouble. It was so bad that one of the cadets, who was the son of a senior Army general, General Trudeau, actually hired a lawyer and brought suit against Haig. Such a thing is unheard of at West Point. We would have to examine that scandal because I have my private opinions of what went on in England when Ronald Reagan was there, but it'd be interesting to check out why General Trudeau's son was suing Alexander Haig at West Point. He goes on, Haig was quickly transferred to the Pentagon after that, and given the gopher job with Califano. Of course, Califano was the contact man for the Army with the Central Intelligence Agency. Things came to the Joint Chief of Staff through my office to Califano. It was very secret. In this capacity, Haig was working with Army Special Forces, those are the Green Berets and the Wilson and the Turples and the Corkle, they hired the Green Berets and Special Forces, and the Green Berets trained the gunmen who later shot Kennedy's head off in Dealey Plaza. They did that at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. They practiced on trains going through an area there on shooting Kennedy's head. He doesn't have that in the letter. I have this from people who trained with the Special Forces. He said, in this capacity, Haig was working with the Army Special Forces. Many were undercover CIA, and he knew a lot of CIA. One day, I came down to Califano's office, and I entered the door, and he signaled for me to be quiet. Then he showed me a paper. It was Haig's promotion to lieutenant colonel. I went down to the Pentagon concourse and bought him a set of lieutenant colonel leaves for Haig so Califano could pin it on him. Haig was getting pushed along with promotion so he could hold down a special series of jobs in the Pentagon. As Califano moved up to the Office of Secretary of Defense, he was special assistant to Robert McNamara. He brought Haig along and then added Alex Butterfield, who I mentioned on the anniversary of Watergate, was brought up from Australia to work with Haig to help bug Richard Nixon's office and give him that slippery pass out of office with those tapes. He doesn't have this in the letter. I had Butterfield and Haig connections. They worked together until JFK was murdered. Then Califano went to the White House, and he brought his two best gophers, Haig and Butterfield. If you don't know the expression, you send them go for this and go for that. That's used in Hollywood and a lot of other places, military and so forth. You see, it was a perfect setup for the CIA. Here was a man with a fine job, Califano. He made it possible for Haig and Butterfield to get all kinds of magic for him. Califano thought they were great. This enhanced Califano's status with Lyndon Johnson. Kennedy was dead then, and behind the scenes, and CIA Haig and Butterfield looked like genius types. Then Nixon came in, and it was easy for the CIA to suggest that Henry Kissinger have these two guys. They're just what he needed. And the protege of Haig, of Fritz Kramer, who owes his career to Fritz Kramer, just as does Kissinger, they were into place. And he said they worked their way into the White House and with the Secret Service, and Haig and Butterfield fooled around with the Secret Service. So that is a letter from Fletcher Prouty on Fritz Kramer's protege, Alexander Haig, how he moved up, and also the mysterious offices of Fritz Kramer. So it's hard to pin him down even to the Pentagon. He's very elusive. Now, we'll leave Kramer versus Kramer and go on to some other subjects because I have a lot of material here. There is an all-out war on mafia in Italy, the San Francisco Chronicle and New York Times had today. A official from Palermo, the same city where Correa sends their heroin and their cocaine and their morphine to be the blocks to be processed. The chief investigator in Palermo, General Carlo Alberto Della Chiesa, and his wife, he's the regional governor of Palermo, Italy, were gunned down this week. I know it has to do with Roberta Calvi and the scandals of Banco Ambrosiana and the link of the Vatican to the heroin cocaine trade and the banks collapsing. There have been 100 murders in Palermo since 1982. And now this chief investigator was going into the mafia and the terrorists. And of course, they're the same. As a matter of fact, the Red Brigades just joined the Amorta, the mafia syndicate. And I always said that the cover for disrupting the communities like Operation Chaos that the CIA and FBI had in the United States was taking place in Italy for a long, long time. So another regional governor was shot, and now they're saying in Rome, we are going to stop this mafia control of the government, of public officials. They seem to have had enough. Now, they can't run the government. They can't keep money in the country. It's going to Swiss banks, overseas banks. The banks have collapsed. The murders are going on continuously. Nobody can investigate them because the judges and the investigators are being knocked off. As a matter of fact, Michael Sindona, the banker for the Vatican, has been charged for a murder of one of these people, along with David Kennedy, who was our Secretary of the Treasury under Richard Nixon. The only way to clean up that mess in Italy or in the United States is to get rid of the mafia out of the White House, out of the Justice Department, and stop the domestic killings in the United States that are going on. They're not as obvious to some of you, but if you follow it every week and add them up, they're all interrelated. The people that are being killed, many of them have links to this tangled web, and the web is coming apart, but there have to be drastic changes made, and made quickly. There was a picture in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, September the 6th, reviewing guard Egyptian Defense Minister Field Marshal Abdel Abu Ghazala marching along in the goose step in front of him and Mr. Caspar Weinberger in Egypt. If you remember, 1 year ago, it was October 20th, 1981, I did a tape that was broadcast 5:15 about Abu Ghazala, the Egyptian defense minister. He's the one that sat on the left of Sadat. Mubarak sat on the right. Sadat got 28 bullets. These guys are still goose-stepping, and the day before Sadat was murdered, 48 hours before, Mubarak was having lunch at the home of George Bush in Washington, D.C. Now Caspar Weinberger is over there working with these men who did their boss in and making provisions for the future of Egypt as some of these scandals begin to collapse. He's traveling around the Middle East, and I do mean they're scandals. I'll take about 2 minutes to update the Steve Roper, Mike Nomad comic strip. Some of you may wonder why this particular thing interests me. I mentioned it several weeks ago because they've had pictures of the Battle of the Bulge and a man that was killed on a film set that seemed identical to the Vic Morrow setting for the Twilight Zone movie that was being made. And several weeks ago, August the 16th, I mentioned the comic strip and referring to an actor who was playing a Nazi war criminal who actually was a war criminal. And so he was killed on the set. And the man who killed him, his father in the comic strip, had lost and been killed by this man at the Battle of the Bulge. And a man named McCord was involved. I mentioned James McCord of Watergate fame and his background with military intelligence. Well, this week there were two articles in the L.A. Times and the Los Angeles Examiner, going back to the comic strips of the last week, but this is the serious article, was the charge switched on the Twilight set, the technician saying that the wrong shell exploded when they were making the movie and Vic Morrow was killed, the man with the Zurich bank accounts, the overseas banks, that was kind of a clue to what was going on before I was reading the comics and somebody told me to check this out. There was a bomb that was supposed to go off. It was a 12-inch circular mortar bomb in a hut, which would be thrown up just as the helicopter went off, and somebody switched it with a 24-inch square-based mortar bomb that caused the accident. And they're investigating in Los Angeles because the technicians say the wrong shell exploded, and they don't know who set it. If a smaller one was there, somebody came and put a larger one, and they're investigating who it was who transferred the size of the bomb that fell, that caused the helicopter to fall on this particular actor. August the 18th, 1982, the LA Times and the LA Herald and Examiner, who changed the shells that a bigger shell caused the actor's death. So the funny papers, the comic strips, ha-ha, have been running a series, and one of the references to this particular scene in Steve Roper, the continuation, is a man points to the fellow who set the bomb off to avenge his father's death. He says, "Just who pointed you, some kind Lord High Executioner," which was a term, it's a common term from Gilbert and Sullivan and also the Zodiac Killer. But then another police official comes in and says, "We know, we have eyewitnesses. His assistant saw him plant the charge." Now, a charge was planted and changed. Then the comic book goes into the fact they move to Denver, Colorado, which is where James McCord currently lives. And then this week, just yesterday and today, they have him at the Jersey Turnpike with a large truck filled with meat. And he's moving a truck, this one character, it's the Rocky Mountain Beef from Denver, Colorado. Well, David Murdoch became a partner with I've got him on the block on his name, Arm & Hammer, bought the Iowa Beef Company, and David Murdoch hired and has hired Robert Haldeman as his full-time assistant. Haldeman helped set up some of those assassination teams in the White House when he was working for Richard Nixon and had this extra fund of hundreds of thousands of dollars in his desk that also filtered down to people opposing George Wallace's nomination or running for election at the time. So the article, funny paper, brings in planting bombs, the beef, the Denver, Colorado, the Iowa, the Rocky Mountain beef. And then today there was another part talking about, I was pulling a reefer full of beef, meaning a refrigerator, or it could be marijuana. because David Murdoch is from Arizona and he's very close to Barry Goldwater and that entire syndicate. You can't read too much into it, but the names are interesting. The Battle of the Bulge, the planting of a charge, the meat company, Denver, Colorado, New Jersey, with all the conflict of Raymond Donovan, the Labor Department, and the murders of people around Donovan. So whether or not this is all coincidence, I don't know, but it seems strange, and I'll keep you up on the certain words that are used. And if you find more, let me know. There's so many similarities to the death of this actor on the set that I'll just watch it from week to week or day to day and see how it goes. Now, in one more minute before the half hour is over, Will Hayden Griffin died. He's a retired FBI agent, lived in Dallas. Will Hayden Griffin, a retired agent, was actively involved in the assassination, investigating the assassination of President John Kennedy. He was 68. It didn't say what he died of or how. But again, another primary witness, a party of the cover-up of J. Edgar Hoover, William Sullivan, who then himself was murdered when the House Select Committee was going into the investigation of Kennedy's murder. Another primary witness who covered it all up is dead. There's just a brief mention that he died and that he was part of the investigation. They should change the word to part of the cover-up. We'll take a break now for 1 minute. We're just about a half a second from it. And we'll get back on the second half of this program.